Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE. That's our toll-free number. You can also hit us up on Discord. Discord.lrn.fm. All you got to do is load the Discord client on your smartphone, your laptop, whatever device you like. Use your high-speed internet connection, a decent microphone, and you will sound like you are sitting right here in the studio with myself. My name is Chris. We're also joined in studio by...
the artist soon to be known as Nobody.
And Chris.
The artist formerly known, I don't even know if I should give your name out tonight.
We can just call me Nobody.
We're going to go with Nobody. All right. So the artist formerly known as Nobody, who is not joining us in studio, but hopefully will be back soon, will be one of our other hosts, Mark Edge. Mark ran into some difficulties.
Did he ever?
As many listeners may know, Mark and Ian have been taking a bit of a sabbatical. They took a little trip to Japan to see a friend of the show and to spend some time over there. And Mark was denied entry into, what do you call it? I want to say the Hermit Kingdom, because that would just be perfect if they were on their way.
I was thinking the Empire.
The Empire.
Yeah.
The Empire. Yeah, I think that kind of went its own way.
Went the way of the dinosaur.
Yeah.
The Shogun said, no Japan for you.
No. But as many listeners of the show know, Mark does have has had some problems with the law in the past, to put it mildly. And
the law has had some problems with him.
Yeah, and because of that, he was denied entry. And
it's been a while. It's been 30 years since it was the issue for... came up, so...
Yeah, and it was not a small issue, not a minor issue.
It sounded like, I mean, from the sounds of it, it went from being less of an issue to more of an issue after somebody got their, you know, panties in a wind, or however that expression is.
However you want to put it. Mark was party to a very serious crime, to the most serious of crimes, when he was much younger.
Yeah, he was 17, I think, wasn't
he? Yes, and he... he was charged, found guilty, and did his time. And
he did.
And this is when I think of words like, you know, rehabilitation and redemption and entering society again, because how long should a felony follow someone, assuming that they've turned themselves around? And I think for a lot of people that are sort of stuck in this system, and I mean the criminal justice system, I don't know if our founders really believed that it was going to be, even if you've done your time, even if you've served, you know, paid back society for whatever crime society alleges you of doing, that you would be marked for life.
It's interesting. It was actually worse under the British Empire, in some respects it was better, because under the British Empire, people were very rarely convicted. It was something like 1 in 10. And not anymore. Now it's like 97% get convicted, and those who don't plead guilty, it's like 80%. I'm sorry, 97% plead guilty, and then it's like 80 at the federal level anyway. It's like 80% that don't plead guilty get convicted anyway.
Interesting. Mm. And now this is something district attorneys, this is a campaign slogan for them.
Yeah.
I prosecuted 97% of my cases were found guilty, regardless of what we had to do to make sure they were guilty.
It's how you climb the political ladder.
It seems like we should be able to change the way that people listen to that. So when somebody says 97% of my cases ended in conviction, what they're saying is I'm corrupt and I don't mind convicting innocent people.
Right.
Because you can't. Yeah. There's no way 97% of those people were guilty.
No. Of course not.
Right.
They manipulate the circumstances to make it sound like something's worse than it is. And if, you don't cooperate, then, they throw even more charges on and they stack the charges to begin with. So, yeah, I mean, it's basically, you're forced to plead guilty because nobody wants to spend the rest of their life in prison.
Right. So. And nobody also wants to spend tens of thousands of dollars to defend themselves, unfortunately, over something that they could probably beat.
Yeah.
But well, but the poor
I don't know. I don't know about that. I mean, 80% of the people get found guilty anyway. So I don't even know that even if you defend yourself, you're still probably going to get found guilty. Even right. if you're innocent.
I had more than one attorney advise me to plead guilty to a felony for being a felon in possession of a garden implement when I was arrested for having a machete.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me.
That's pretty frightening because that's not illegal in New Hampshire. And I beat that case
right.
by just demanding a probable cause hearing and forcing the district attorney to look at the evidence.
Right.
Mm.
At which point they said, oh, it's a machete. That's not illegal. I think we're going to drop this case.
Yeah. yeah. But it's sad. And it's sad when people get caught up in that. And, you know, I have no mercy for a felon of a violent crime. You know, mm-hmm. where there's an actual, a real criminal.
Well, the mercy I would give him is take him out behind a barn and shoot him.
Right. Better than going to jail.
Yeah. And I say that as somebody who's been to jail, not because it's more harsh, but because it's kinder just to take somebody out and shoot them than to give them as lengthy a jail sentence as would be meaningful to answer homicide.
Right.
You
right.
know.
Yeah. It's a shame. 855-450-FREE. So that's why Mark wouldn't be here normally tonight anyway. But I know a lot of our listeners were bringing up questions about what happened with Mark, what happened with his trip. And but that's what's going on. I think Mark will be in studio tomorrow night. I believe so. And if he's jet-lagged to hell and back after spending basically 72 hours straight in international air travel, long enough to turn around and come back home, I would certainly understand if he might need a day off.
Yeah.
But we'll see how that goes. I talked to him. He was laid over in San Francisco, Salt Lake City, which is not that far air travel-wise from Denver, and I'm guessing that a lot of people are going to be going to Denver. So that may be a busy airport because what Denver first in U.S. to decriminalize psychedelic mushrooms?
Wow. Hey, Mark, bro, pick me some up while you're laying over.
If you got a layover in there. So it's kind of interesting. They're not doing, well, we'll get into this because it explains what's going on. Psilocybin possession would remain illegal, but would become police's, quote, lowest law enforcement priority. Denver, this comes to us from the Denver Post, by the way. Denver is poised to become the first city in the nation to effectively decriminalize psychedelic mushrooms. After closing an early vote deficit Tuesday night and early Wednesday, final unofficial results posted late in the afternoon showed a reversal of fortune, with Initiative 301 set to pass narrowly with a 50.6% of the vote. The total stands at 89,320 votes in favor and 87,341 against, a margin of 1,979, and that's on this ballot initiative. The Denver Elections Division will continue accepting military and overseas ballots, but typically those numbers are small. Results will be certified by May 16th. Quote, "It's been one hell of a 21 and a half hours," unquote. Initiative 301 campaign manager Kevin Matthews said, quote, "If these results hold, this is an example of the absurd comedy of the great metaphor. Against all odds, we prevailed. This is what happens when a small team of dedicated and passionate people unite under a single idea to create change," unquote. Denver's vote has attracted national attention. While efforts are afoot to get psilocybin-related measures on the ballot in California and Oregon in 2020, Denver hosted the first ever U.S. popular vote on the matter, according to organizers. An earlier effort in California last year failed to qualify for the ballot. Though Initiative 301 attracted no organized opposition, critics of Colorado's legalization of marijuana lamented the prospect of Denver blazing yet another trail they see as misguided and potentially harmful. 855-450-FREE. What do you think? How about it? Should police quit busting people for plants that they can put into their own bodies? Let us know. 855-450-FREE. This is Free Talk Live. Yeah! This is Free Talk Live, 855-450-FREE. That's our number. We'd love to hear from you. And what I love about Free Talk Live, this is why I listened to the show before I became a host. It's truly open phones. If you want to call on any subject you like, call. Give us a ring. Let other people know what you think. We may not agree with you. No promises there. But we promise we'll give you a fair shake, and then we might have a discussion. This country needs more good discussions, whether people agree or disagree. In studio, it's myself, Chris.
Rich Paul.
And Chris, too.
You mean nobody.
That's right.
Gosh, see, now when I've got to update Rich on his own nom de guerre, it's
nobody remembers that kind of thing.
Nobody does remember that. Should we explain or no? We're just going to let that one go. We've been talking Denver. Denver being the first in the U.S., first city to decriminalize psychedelic mushrooms, and they had a ballot initiative that looks like it's won by a very narrow margin, and that's kind of a good thing, I think. I think most of these things should be decriminalized. And
most?
Well, I'm trying to think what I would not decriminalize.
Now, I've actually found a word I like better than decriminalize now.
Please.
Deregulate.
Well, deregulate is, to me, the ultimate goal. When we talk about decriminalization, that just says, well, we're not going to arrest you for it.
So here's an interesting question, though. Is it, when it's criminalized, is it regulated? You're basically picking between regulation and criminalization, I think.
Well, criminalization is the harshest, most aromatic form of regulation.
Yeah, that might be true.
Yeah.
Basically, what's the purpose of the war on drugs? It's to regulate competitors to Big Pharma out of the market and to regulate competitors to big brewing out of the market.
See, we do hear that a lot here. I think we're also missing the let me impose my morality on you. That is part of it, too.
That's true. That's
you know
true.
What I mean?
There's some Jesus-y hate mixed in there.
I'm not going to call it Jesus-y.
Okay.
I will say...
there's some loving hate mixed in there. No, let's put it this way.
I was going to say there's a hatred for people to be free coming from lots of major religions.
They hate us for our freedom.
Where have I heard that before? In the case of Denver, like I said, this ballot initiative appears to have won by a narrow margin, and it basically it's the first time that any ballot measure regarding psilocybin, that is the active psychotropic ingredient of hallucinogenic mushrooms. And it just basically says, as this article points out, the measure essentially tells police to look the other way on adult psilocybin use. I think it's important to note there that they mention adult psilocybin use, and they don't expand on that. We're going to try to pull up the actual law.
It always amazes me that they actually continue to target children, when they regulate for adults.
Right.
It's like you're gonna punish children more harshly than you would do adults. Does that make any sense to anybody?
Well, the thing that makes sense to me, if anything, would be punishing adults who pass it to children, as opposed to. And I don't know how this law is written. If they're actually saying
that
we're not going to
sense.
Arrest adults for this, but we're going to arrest kids for this.
Well, this is exactly what they're saying.
I would ask the parents to ask themselves how much they want their kids to be arrested. I mean, it's
right.
Better than arresting everybody for it, but it seems to be...
It's discriminatory and in a very terrible way, too. Like,
right. Well, but that is how they are with alcohol, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, there's all sorts of things that we like punish kids for that adults can do legally, and that just seems messed up. Mm-hmm. Like...
Police are way more dangerous than alcohol. How many people die of alcohol poisoning in America compared to police poisoning?
A fair number, but I'm willing to bet that police death by cop is probably higher.
Yeah.
And the death by overdose of marijuana, I did see As of last week, actually.
Error, division by zero.
No, it surpassed death by people being gored by unicorns. So that was, I thought, a fundamental.
By how much?
So zero.
So still zero. Still zero.
Okay, so it's matched it.
That's funny.
It has matched it.
Yeah.
So I'll say zero plus. Nah, I couldn't even do that.
It's on par.
But we're going to dig up that. We're going to dig up what was actually passed, because I don't know if they actually even passed a law. I think this is directing the. My guess is, based on the wording of this article, that they're directing the chief of police for Denver just look the other way.
Yeah, you know, I have to wonder, like, what does this actually mean in practice? I mean, if you're, you know, I don't know, doing mushrooms on your porch, are they actually supposed to ignore it? Or is it just supposed to be ignore it if there's some other crime going on across the street involving something else? Like, I don't know, what else is illegal that might be very insignificant? Anything, I mean, basically.
Marijuana. Oh, that's right. We're talking Denver.
Yeah, I mean...
But Denver has laws against public use.
I guess. Okay. What about like smoking, like in 25 feet of a building? I mean, would they have to go after that? If I'm assuming there probably isn't a law, but assuming there is a law there about that, would they have to go after that ahead of the guy who's doing the...
Well, I'm sorry, but how do you identify someone on mushrooms? Based on my experience, it's someone who's laughing their butt off and maybe dressing up like their father at a baseball game. Those are things I've seen
people do
while they're on mushrooms.
I'm assuming that this
like
is like
father at a baseball game.
It's the damnedest thing, Rich. I'll tell you about
I'm
it.
I'm assuming
time.
Like that these people are doing mushrooms in public or somewhere around cops. Like if you started doing that and there's like two different. I mean, is that how this is supposed to work?
I don't know.
They're going to have a hard time telling what you're eating also. I mean, if you're just sitting there shoveling,
I guess.
Are they really going to look closely enough to see
how do
that,
they currently bust people
for potato
mushrooms? Oh,
those are potato chips. Those are mushrooms.
That's not a portobello.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's
kind of
craziness.
It doesn't look like a portobello to me.
You're right to bring up the question of how were you ever going to enforce the existing laws that are on the books? And, you know, that is the insanity of this war on drugs. So much of it. Not only makes no sense and is counterproductive, but it's so much of it is just unenforceable. So you've got these obscure, you know, we had a story that we read last night about great grandmother who was arrested.
Great.
In Disney World by a local sheriff for possession of CBD oil.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Which is technically illegal.
Yeah, I read about that
in
story.
Florida. Despite the fact that you could walk into any gas station and probably buy a bottle of CBD oil.
How can you say she's a great grandmother? She broke the law. She's a bad grandmother.
She
was pretty old,
too.
She was like 69, wasn't she?
69. Easy, dude.
Yeah,
don't call that so old. All right.
sorry there.
That's all right. That's
Chris.
All right. That's okay, father time. But yeah, that's the insanity of this stuff. And again, who is the victim? If someone is doing mushrooms, are they creating an actual victim, which is part of the definition of a crime? 855-450-FREE. What do you think? Is Denver taking the right approach? Are they just saying, you know, just ignore it? Or should they go further?
I think they should eliminate it.
They just let them do what they want. 855-450-FREE. This is Free Talk Live.
I want to tell you about my favorite cryptocurrency wallet, Edge Wallet, at edge.app. Edge is the wallet I use more than any other, and that was true long before Edge Wallet became a sponsor of Free Talk Live. Edge Wallet allows you to buy, sell, trade, and securely hold your cryptocurrencies, including Bitcoin, Ethereum, tokens, Monero, Ripple, Dash, Bitcoin Cash, and more. It's available for both Android and iOS, and you can download it via the Play or App Store or via Edge Wallet's website, edge.app. Secure your freedom with Edge Wallet.
This is Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE. That's our toll-free number. That means you can pick up the phone, give us a call, get whatever is on your mind off your chest, and do it for free. And we like freedom, and we like words that start with free, like no free lunch, but Free Talk Live. Did that work? I guess.
That didn't work.
All right. I'm a little punchy, but that's all right. We've been talking about Denver. And Denver, which has taken this first important step, I think, And it looks like they're basically telling their police to look the other way on adult psilocybin use. This story from the Denver Post continues, quote, "We'll see what the final numbers are, but we're a little stunned to see a 7,000 vote flip overnight on that," unquote, said Jeff Hunt, director of Centennial Institute at Colorado Christian University, who initially questioned on Twitter whether vote tampering was involved. Quote, "We'll continue to fight the growing drug culture. Denver's becoming the illicit drug capital of the world. The larger issue here is not good for our city," unquote. Chris Wade, what do you think?
I don't know. I think that's I don't think I would say I agree with that. I mean, I think I don't necessarily know that more drug use is necessarily better, but at least from an economic perspective, it's certainly better.
Right.
And I guess it would depend on, you know, how people are using it and what they're using.
More drug use isn't always better from an economic standpoint. It is expensive.
True. Personally, it can be. But, you know, and there are.
But legal drugs are better.
I think it's better from a freedom perspective for sure. And I certainly think the freedom perspective outweighs any other. So it's a definitely a thing in the right direction, basically.
Right.
And there are also practical reasons, even for heroin. Why should heroin be legal? Well, heroin should be legal because sometimes people break their legs and their arms. And if what you need is a painkiller, you know what you need. You need a painkiller. You should be able to go down to the store and buy one without bothering a doctor. And that becomes essential because if you took away a lot of unnecessary doctor visits, it would get cheaper to see a doctor.
Right.
So the war on drugs produces and you know, mandatory prescriptions are all about the war on drugs. They're all about the governmental terror that somebody somewhere might take something into their bloodstream and feel good for a minute.
Right. But to be clear, the war on drugs, that isn't when the real war on drugs began. To me, I look back at the, you know, pre-1800s when basically physicians, doctors, whatever they wanted to call themselves, barbers, took it upon themselves to treat people, to help people out. That was their occupation, was to make them well again. And they didn't have all the technology that we do now. But then we had the beginning of the progressive era in the late 1800s and early 1900s, you know, the Teddy Roosevelt years, the Woodrow Wilson years, where suddenly those two guys decided that, you know what this world needs is much more regulation, much more big government, more central planning, everything we can. And I bring those two up because one's a Democrat and one's a Republican, but they still stood for a progressive government, and this is what they wanted. So the first attempts to regulate drugs at the federal level were done, you know, by these guys.
Regulation tends to be the redistribution of economic prosperity to a certain group of individuals. That's basically what it does, and it's an effect in it's the intent in most cases. It may be that they're saying, for example, healthcare. You know, it's basically forcing you to purchase health insurance, and that basically, you know, somebody else profits off of that. You know, the argument is, it's for the people, but the reality is sometimes it's more important to have food in your stomach and like not die of starvation or have a roof over your head than it is to have health insurance. They take that decision away from you.
That's one of the things that I really looked into when I was in Manchester, because one of the things that I made it a point of doing is actually getting to know some addicts on a personal level and know what they did. And it was very enlightening, you know. A lot of these things are I calculated out based on estimates and what I observed, what one of the young prostitutes I knew made, and she was making like $150,000 a year.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty good. But she was homeless when I met her. And she was homeless until I actually let her come stay with me for a while. And, you know, not as my girlfriend. She was still continuing to work. I just took her in for a while.
She had a drug problem, and she was blowing that all on drugs, basically.
Well, she was, but when you think about it, there's no reason that a dose of heroin should be more expensive than a dose of aspirin. So let's say that it is 10 times as expensive as a dose of aspirin.
A dose of aspirin is overpriced, too. So,
well, yeah, but nonetheless, there's no reason... without getting in, that's a rabbit trail. There's no reason that a dose of heroin should cost $20 when a dose of aspirin costs, even if a dose of aspirin costs 50 cents and you can get it cheaper than that.
Yeah.
Now, if
I'm going to stop right here and say that I don't advocate setting a price for anything. Let the market do it. The market would do these things.
The price would fall because there is nobody preventing delivery of the product. If you have to produce 100 grams for every gram that gets delivered, then
you know what people fail to realize is that the free market would result in lower quality products potentially, but you also have competition, so you would also have higher quality products as well.
Exactly, and that's an important distinction.
Yeah, and it's up to you to make the decision of, do you want the thing that might kill me, or do you want the thing, you know, that is not going to kill me? And
it's your choice.
Addiction is a lot less likely to kill you, I would say. And this may seem paradoxical. I would say addiction is less likely to kill you if you can get your drug of choice at $1 a dose than if you can get your drug than if your drug of choice costs $100
a
dose.
And here's the thing: in a deregulated market, you would know what you're getting. Okay,
right.
You don't know what you're getting when you're buying drugs off the street, because there's nobody. You know, it's interesting because one of the ways they smuggle some of, and I forget exactly what the drug is in particular, but one of the ways they smuggle certain types of drugs is by concentrating it, and then the people who receive the drugs, okay, the drug dealers, they don't actually have the tools to measure the dosage.
Unconcentrated.
So, right. Unconcentrated and measure the dosage accurately. So you end up with overdosing. And I know in the UK and a bunch of other places, it's one of the major problems that they're currently encountering. And I think that's a replacement for heroin.
That's
maybe?
Not quite how it plays out in the market. The way it plays out in the market is the purity of what you get depends on two things. The first is the number of steps you are from the source. And the second is the level of integrity of each of those steps.
Yeah, but this is a specific case, not your more general case with other types of drugs. So I would agree, but I'm thinking of one particular case. I wish I could remember the drugs. Does anybody know what I'm talking about?
I wish you could too, because I don't know.
I feel like it's something that people, it's kind of replaced heroin because it's easier
fentanyl?
To smuggle. Yeah, fentanyl, that's it.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a new, much more powerful opiate that's soon to hit the markets, which is supposedly 100 or 1,000 times as powerful as fentanyl.
Yikes.
This is being produced for by a major drug company.
Yeah, I mean,
it's going
to
be
basically it's cheaper to buy the fentanyl, I guess, than the heroin or something to that effect. So
it
so,
is cheaper because you can
more
get
risky
it shipped in from China in large quantities.
Yep.
And the other thing is people are now knowingly buying fentanyl, which is actually an improvement, because if they knowingly buy fentanyl and they know what it is, they know how to dose it.
We would hope they know how to dose it, and that's the big question.
I think the free the regulated market's undermining that, though.
What do you think? We're talking about drugs. What do you think? Should drugs be legal? Should they be regulated? Those are two of our choices. We want to hear from you, 855-450-FREE. This is Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. It's our toll-free number. You can call us up for free and give us a piece of your mind. You worried? You worried that you're a Democrat and you're not sure if this audience is all Republicans or vice versa? Doesn't matter. We're... I would say mostly of a libertarian bent here, but we like to hear from people of all walks of life and of all stripes. So don't be afraid of offending us. We'll give you a fair shake, and then we may offer some alternatives that you may not have thought of. In studio, we have myself, Chris.
Nobody.
And Chris, too.
Chris, Jesus, this is the problem, isn't it? We just have these. We have too many Chris's.
Should I use my last name instead?
You could go by Wade.
I could.
I mean, that's a really good idea.
That also would work.
I could go by Eugene, which would be my middle name, which is atrocious. No offense to my father. But Eugene, I just immediately think of a movie character. I'm not even sure which one, but this movie character in my mind is not too bright.
I hate really? To say.
Well, yeah. Eugene.
See, I would say most of the Eugenes that I know probably go by Gene.
My father did.
Yeah.
Because Eugene, well, technically it is my last name, but excuse me, my middle name.
I was going to say, awkward.
The only time I ever really heard it was when my mother was very upset with me, and that's when I would hear Eugene. We are going to go to the phones.
Did she do the whole thing? Did she say, Chris, Eugene, Eugene?
It was Christopher Eugene.
Yes. Christopher Eugene Eugene.
Christopher Eugene Reitman.
Okay.
Yeah, I get the whole thing. We're going to go to the phones where we've got Sarah in Albuquerque. Sarah, you're on Free Talk Live.
Yes, I heard on the computer that the Smurfs...
did you get a computer?
Show.
Hold on, this could be breaking news.
When news breaks, we fix it.
Did I hear that correctly?
Wait a minute, I heard on the computer a while ago...
Okay, but we're a bit stumped here.
Yeah.
You have a computer now?
What computer did you buy? I want to know all about it.
No. This is what I was heard like 20 years ago. You know, because
you heard this 20 years ago, and you waited till now to tell us.
I know.
So was this like an Apple II or something?
Apple IIe was a lot more than 20 years
ago.
Yeah,
that's true.
I want to get to the important things. Sarah, you are talking about Smurfs.
Maybe this was like a compact.
Smurfs?
Tell us about Smurfs.
Well, it was I was told that it was created by the Russians indoctrinate.
The Smurfs were created by the Russians?
That's why I'm bringing it up.
The
Smurfs were actually created by the Russians to affect the American children to have communist values.
What does
that's
this have
Smurfy.
To do? I just want to know what this has to do with Trump.
No, but I'm saying that...
Was Trump also created by the Russians to instill communist values in America?
Is that what you're alleging? When you say Smurf, do you secretly mean Trump?
The brainy Smurf, the one that was arguing that one.
I never watched the show.
He was actually Trotsky. Technically, he was always arguing and having fights with the whole group.
Right there in the Smurfs. We didn't know. This is
I'm bringing it up because then one of them was actually a Stalin, Stalin character, but. I wonder what communist values that they were doing. I never watched or followed the plot. I wonder if they're teaching the children to share and to share alike.
So, Sarah, are you a communist?
Yes, I am a communist.
Huh.
Card carrying, or you just feel
Have you watched the Smurfs? Have you studied the genre as an adult?
But the thing is, I used to watch Smurf as a kid. You know what I mean? Like a 9-year-old or 13-year-old. But I never paid attention. But I remember playing.
Do you think that the Smurfs made you a communist?
No, but what
could
I'm
it
saying
be
is that
your mind was washed by the commies, and that's how believing what you believe?
You do have some seriously socialist tendencies and things
you
bring up.
You do, this trust for authority. Like, Papa Smurf would never do wrong. So, like, whenever you look at a president, is it Papa Smurf?
I don't understand how anybody can support genocide, Sarah. I mean, what is with...
Oh, my God. Is she saying we should kill the Smurfs?
No, what I'm saying is that... The the Russians have always been here trying to indoctrinate communist value in America in a very subtle way. That's what I'm bringing up.
And your support
the Communist
that.
Party has always been.
And your evidence of that, perhaps, being a Smurf watcher turned commie.
Perhaps a Smurf herself.
So maybe it worked.
Who doesn't know that there are commie messages in the Smurfs. That's the definition of subliminal programming, isn't it?
Well, that is exactly the point. They wanna get the children. I'm not even aware of any other story plot except Papa Smurf and the woman Smurf. The female Smurf, and then the brainy Smurf, the one that was fighting and arguing all the time.
The Trotsky.
But you're right. You know what? I bet what you're saying is right. Unconsciously, subliminally, they were indoctrinating me.
Did you say,
wait, I think you're putting on your sunglasses, sweetheart.
Did you say unconsciously or subconsciously?
You're waking up.
Okay. They're trying to reach 3-year-olds, 5-year-olds, kids in diapers. It's subliminal, and so I'm thinking I don't remember any of the plot
but
except
you,
they were all getting along and then they were all cooperating.
And
that's one thing that I do remember.
And hence you became a communist after all this, Sarah. Thank you for your call.
Wow.
There may be some truth to this. Do you think that the Smurfs were put here to indoctrinate a free country, sort of, almost at that point? Into the ways of communism.
I think that that the Smurfs were away, were on the road, and I think that Hollywood in general was taken over by socialists and communists. And if you look at the themes of movies, and people have been saying this for decades,
back since McCarthy.
Since McCarthy, since before McCarthy. The thing is, McCarthy is another one of those cases where his methods were wrong. They violated the First Amendment.
Certainly.
But they didn't save him, even though his ideas were right. He was absolutely right that communism was a menace. He was absolutely right that we were being indoctrinated. And it's not just the cartoons, it's the schools.
Well,
schools are full of socialists.
No argument
it's,
there.
It's where communism started in America. It's with the public schools. I mean, that's what was one of the early things.
And that's
that
not an accident.
No, I don't think so.
No, certainly by design, but the problem with McCarthy and the idea that we're going to root out everything is your net becomes broader and broader and your definition becomes broader and broader until people who don't meet the original definition of what you were going after, it starts to be that everybody looks a little red. That was the part that disturbed
there's a lot of problems there. First off, it should be very easy to identify the communists in your society, because they should be unafraid to stand outside, raise their fists, and say, "I'm a communist, and if you don't like it, move to Somalia." Okay? They should be able to say that without fearing any involuntary aerial tours. and I say that even in a capitalist society, you should be free to say anything. You just shouldn't.
That doesn't enforce tolerance, and that doesn't mean that there may not be repercussions for what you say.
Well, tolerance and acceptance are two things. Okay, tolerance is if you're irritating me and I don't like punch you in the nose, I've tolerated that irritation, but that doesn't mean that I've accepted it.
Sure.
I may have sat there and yelled at you for irritating me, but if I didn't punch you in the nose, I've still tolerated it.
So the nose punch is the decision.
So yeah, the difference between tolerance and acceptance is acceptance, you think it's okay, and tolerance, you're just not doing anything about it right now.
Intriguing. 855-450-FREE. What do you think? This whole conversation started about legalization of drugs, and we've got some callers who want to discuss that. And I want to discuss it more because I think there is a liberty aspect of this that a lot of people ignore. This is Free Talk Live.
Don't you hate that feeling in the pit of your stomach when the police pull you over? Most people have no idea how to handle it properly, and they promptly get fed into the municipal fee-generating meat grinder. Or maybe you recall that feeling you get when you go to the mailbox and see one or more letters from the IRS. You get a sense of impending doom, don't you? So let me ask you, if you could learn how to use the law to beat the IRS, traffic tickets, almost any courtroom scenario, collectors, credit card debt, and even mortgage debt because of fraud perpetrated against you, would that be worth knowing about? Don't laugh. Investigate. Check out the life-changing benefits of the Lighthouse Law Club at their website, lighthouselaw.club. That's lighthouselaw.club. And while you're at it, visit the Lighthouse Law Club YouTube channel. You might be in for a pleasant surprise.
Free Talk Live.
This is Free Talk Live. Back for hour number two. We do 3 hours every night, 365 days a year, which I think is pretty cool.
How many men can say that?
Exactly. 3 hours a day, 365 days a year. Well, I'm one of those guys that can say that. But unfortunately for me, because I love doing the show, it's not me every night. We've got a whole collection of hosts and co-hosts who filter through these three chairs and offer their points of view and their aspects. One thing I did want to tell you about, though, is Bitcoin.com. Bitcoin.com is your premier source for everything Bitcoin Cash related. Bitcoin.com can help you choose a Bitcoin Cash wallet, buy Bitcoin Cash, and show you where you can spend your Bitcoin Cash. You can read your latest news or engage with the community on the forums. Learn more about it at Bitcoin.com. That's Bitcoin.com. And the first hour, we discussed this apparent win for freedom in Denver, where they have sort of decriminalized the use of psychedelic mushrooms, psilocybin. Yay! And they've basically told their police, and we're going to get the details on that. Maybe we can discuss it here a little bit later. But they have told their police to just leave them alone. And we discussed how does one tell that someone's on mushrooms? How does one tell that someone is using them or is carrying them or anything else? It just makes little sense. But we're going to go to the phones because we have somebody who is interested in proposing a counter argument to drug legalization. Listening on TuneIn, we have Matthew from Louisiana. Matthew, you're on Free Talk Live. What's on your mind?
So, the argument I always hear about the legalization of all drugs, the counter-argument is that it will cause what you see in Seattle, which if you know anything about the situation in Seattle, it's basically a disaster. It is
a cesspool.
Well, the only question about Seattle with respect to the war on drugs, though, is did the war on drugs cause Seattle to become like that, or did the war on drugs fail to prevent it? Because it did one of the two. So that's not an argument against legalization.
Well, the thing is, I don't think that they enforce the war on drugs very well in Seattle. It's hard for me to... I was watching this one-hour-long YouTube thing about that, and basically, people are afraid that if you legalize heroin, you're going to have a society full of homeless...
Heroin addicts.
You know,
kind of like Switzerland has,
the
right?
Hold on. Okay.
Switzerland's a great example. So Switzerland basically has completely decriminalized the use of heroin. They have opened up their healthcare system to treating addicts, and as a result, addiction has dropped. And last I checked, unless you guys know something I don't know, Switzerland's still a pretty nice place to visit, a lot nicer than downtown Seattle.
Yeah,
any place is better than downtown Seattle. So how long has Switzerland had the decriminalization of all drugs?
Well, I think in specifically, I'm only going to speak to heroin. That's something that Switzerland did.
Okay.
But the point being,
it was Portugal that decriminalized all drugs.
Yes. Again,
right. And there's no point talking about Portugal as an economic model because their economy has been toast forever.
Right, but
they're socialists. Their economy will forever be toast.
The things that they do have going for them are lower drug usage among the young. So this thing that everybody was scared would happen, my God, children are going to start doing drugs. That never happened. Addiction rates would skyrocket. That never happened. And overall, crime has gone down because they've really robbed a black market of their ability to use violence and things like that. So it's
okay. So who pays for the addiction treatment that is issued by the Swiss?
You do understand that it's cheaper not to actually pay for the addiction treatments than it is to lock people in jail, right? Like, you're better off going after treatment if you're like, I'm not in favor of paying for any of it, but it's still much cheaper to pay for treatment than it is as a society as a whole than it is to pay to lock them up. I mean, there's a
TED talk that you need to listen to, bro. It's called "Everything That You Think You Know About Addiction Is Wrong," and that's okay. Have you ever encountered the rat experiments that started the war on drugs? Do you know how this all started?
No, I have not. I do know that there was a lot of brigading by the progressive news media back in the day.
The progressive news media progressed us right into the drug war.
They had a hand in it. But the rat experiments that Rich is referring to... is this the happy rats and the sad rats you're referring to?
Basically, they took a bunch of rats, they locked them up in, I'll do the exposition for the radio audience because not everybody knows. They took rats, they locked them in cages, and they gave them a water bottle and a second water bottle that also had heroin or cocaine in it.
Right.
And the rats invariably used the heroin and cocaine until they died. And people said, oh my God, if you give people heroin or cocaine, they'll use it until they die. We have to make this stuff illegal. Well, the difference between people and these rats is most people are not in cages. So they did a second experiment,
right,
where they built an environment that was natural for rats, where they had other rats to play with, and they had rat toys, and they could have rat sex. And
socialize with other rats.
And socialize with other rats. Not in the economic sense. We're not advocating rat Stalinism or anything here. But they should be able to play with the other rats voluntarily. And what they found is in the case of Rat Park, which is what they called that, none of the rats used the heroin addictively. None of the rats died of overdoses. They would occasionally use it, and it was no big deal. Just like...
Okay.
So what we've got is a problem of people who are disconnected from society.
That's good to know. So now the last question I have to ask, and I don't know if you have the answer. Okay. I might have to look it up. Did the Swiss GDP fall like a rock when they decriminalized heroin?
Switzerland is one of the wealthiest countries in the world, and their economy is one of the strongest. So I don't know what experience you could possibly attribute that, other than it... By Swiss accounts, it seems to have made the country a better place to live, a safer place to live.
Okay. Now tell me this. Would our GDP be higher or lower if instead of the war on drugs, we'd gotten a $1 trillion tax cut?
I think it would probably be better if...
I think so, too.
Yeah.
We'd have the war on drugs.
I'm with you.
My own opinion is it's expensive.
Yes.
We maintain a lot of people in prisons, and now people are like, well, let's just toss them out of prison. Great, you've kept them in prison for 20 years. They can't do anything now.
Yeah.
They're old, and now you're going to toss them out of prison when they're, you know, they're
institutionalized.
You know, that's the only life they've known.
Yeah, and it's sad. Matthew, thanks for your call.
The people who have done that to addicts, to sick people, who have warehoused them in prisons for decades, those people should be tried for crimes against humanity in The Hague, because that they declared a war on their own people for no reason. except politics.
Right. And that can be the only people you are declaring a war on. It doesn't matter what the government calls it. They can call it a war on poverty was a war on the poor. A war on drugs was basically a war against everyone. And you are all in the government's crosshairs until proven innocent. Have fun with that. 855-450-FREE. We're happy to talk drug talk or whatever else is on your mind. Give us a call, 855-450-FREE. This is Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. In studio, you have myself, Chris.
Nobody.
And Wade.
And when? This is just fun. I need a new name, evidently. Everybody's mixing it up tonight, and that's okay. You can mix it up, too, by giving us a call. Again, that number is 855-450-FREE. You can also hit us up on Discord. Discord is a pretty cool little app. You can load on your phone, load it on your laptop, load it on your PC, your Mac, and using your high-speed internet and your quality microphone, you can contact us, be on the radio, and sound like you're sitting here with us in the studio, and we love using it, and we love taking your calls however they come in. You can also watch us. You can watch us on DLive, which is a new streaming application. It's a streaming website. You can go to dlive.lrn.fm and you can actually watch us here in studio and all the fun it is to watch us do our show. Some people seem to think it's fun because we do get some people in there watching us. And DLive is kind of unique because they're really trying to do this monetization of content. They're paying content providers to provide. And that's something that there's been a lot of controversy around YouTube demonetizing people that produce content. And as a result, PewDiePie, who is the top earner on YouTube, the guy has like 94 million subscribers, has moved over to DLive, and that's pretty cool. You can also check us out on Twitch at twitch.lrn.fm. Either of those platforms, we're always streaming, so you can check us out as we do our show. But right now, we want to go to the phones where we've got Tom. He's listening on freetalklive.com. Tom, you're on Free Talk Live.
Yeah, on Tuesday evening in Nashua City Hall, there was a committee hearing about a bill that got amended about raising the minimum age for buying cigarettes and smokeless e-cigarettes.
And real quickly, that is in New Hampshire, correct? Tom, you're calling us from New Hampshire?
Nashua, New Hampshire.
Nashua, New Hampshire,
and
okay.
The Board of Aldermen amended it and sent it back to committee. So I spoke to address the committee Tuesday evening because one of the factors about the nanny state is that they're able to live deep in denial and be unaware. They can manage to be unaware of the hostility that nanny state politicians incite by inflicting these laws on persons who do not consent to them.
Okay, so
even as
to be clear,
I address the committee. Yeah,
yeah. To be clear, in the state of New Hampshire, I believe state law says that if you're 18 years or older, you can buy tobacco products. That includes, you know, cigarettes, pipe tobacco, cigars, e-cigarettes, vape. You know, like vaping and stuff like that. Correct.
Yeah.
That's the state.
Correct.
And what they're trying to do in some towns, the city of Keene, New Hampshire included, is to address this epidemic.
Wait, what?
Hold on. Let me get this out with a straight face. To address this epidemic of young children vaping all over the place. And they do that by raising this age to 21, because if you raise the age to 21, that will address the horrifying addiction of a 10-year-old with a vape pen.
Quick, somebody panic!
Not just that, but I see I discussed the hostility that they incite because when they raised the drinking age to 20 when I was 19, I heard all of the usual same garbage about how, you know, drinking, like smoking during pregnancy, harms the baby. So let's impose this law on men under that age, but not on pregnant women who are over that age, because their rights matter.
Right.
And even as some of the victims counterfeit the official identification documents of your government to defeat your nanny state efforts, some politicians don't get it. Even as some of the victims literally flee the country during spring break for the sole purpose of drinking booze where enemy officers cannot touch them, those nanny state politicians still don't get it. Well, check this out. It's been noted, of course, that they're old enough to go into the service, but they're also old enough not to go into the service. And why should they join the National Guard to protect your life and your property when you won't even vote to protect their right to liberty? And after Hurricane Katrina, in fact, in 2005, a lot of people in New Orleans suffered and perished waiting for the National Guard to rescue them. And the day could come when a natural disaster should strike Nashua, and some of you could find yourself suffering and perishing for want of National Guardsmen as a consequence of the hostility that you maliciously incite by inflicting this hate crime, this nanny state law, on them against their will. And if that should happen, it serves you right.
Exactly. I couldn't agree with you more.
Let me point out that, see, they're deep in denial about the hostility because of the practice of being respectful when people are addressing politicians. It's the habit of the custom to be respectful even as the politicians are using gun-toting goons in bulletproof vests as weapons of unprovoked violence against the citizen addressing the politician is supposed to be respectful. Well, no more Mr. Nice Guy. You know, we got to abandon Mr. Yeah. Nice Guy. We got to tell it like it is. Oh, by the way, if you enjoy that warm feeling, I didn't say this one that time, but if you enjoy that warm feeling you get by imposing all this nanny state protection on persons who don't consent to it, don't forget that you can get a warmer feeling by pouring gasoline all over yourself and lighting a match.
Oh, that's
another one that I might use later.
I honestly don't think that's a bad idea for a lot of politicians. Tom, thank you for your call. But he brings up some interesting points. I mean, the one that strikes me close, I mean, I joined the military at the tender young age of 18 and promptly went back home on leave and promptly got a minor in possession of alcohol. You know, it was like, so one of my first acts after basic training was to get busted for having a beer, which I had been having a beer on post for months.
But you fought for my freedom.
I didn't fight for anything, but the idea that, you know, yes, you can sign up, yes, you can go to war, yes, you can get killed, but you cannot have a cigarette, you cannot have a drink, just strikes me as absurd. Now, to extrapolate that a little further, and you can move on down the age limit, what makes 18 a magic age? You know, what magical thing occurs at 18 other than the state says, we have picked an arbitrary number, and this is the number we choose.
It is arbitrary, and not only that, but they try to extend it to 21. And they can. And the argument they frequently will use is, "Well, your brain's not, you know, these children's brains are not developed."
Right.
Well, the problem is that the brain keeps developing, and so you can use this argument to the point that you're talking about somebody who's 28.
Yes.
I mean, are we going to say you can't drive you can't drive until you're 28? Or you can't smoke until you're 28? You can't drink until you're 28? You can't make any kind of decision for yourself until you're 28? I mean, this is just ridiculous.
Yes, but that
your
is
brain
the
doesn't
trend.
Stop changing it is the trend. Until you start dying.
That's a good point. What do you think? Is 18 a reasonable number, or is it arbitrary? Chris Wade will argue that it's an arbitrary number.
Absolutely.
Picked out of thin air. You got a problem with that? Take it up with him, because we want to hear your argument. 855-450-FREE. This is Free Talk Live.
Free Talk Live has found that though U.S. financial institutions are prohibited from doing business with foreign gambling websites, it's not illegal for U.S.-based internet users to gamble on those sites. People have been using VPNs or virtual private networks to connect to sites like games.bitcoin.com and play games with Bitcoin Cash. Games.bitcoin.com features poker, blackjack, roulette, craps, keno, slots, and dice. You can conduct your own investigation at games.bitcoin.com.
Talk Live, 855-453. That's our toll-free number, 855-450-3733. We'd love to hear from you. And if you're one of those people that's been hearing about the rising price of Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, I recommend Edge Wallet. The Edge Wallet is available on iOS and Android. You can use it to buy, sell, trade, and secure your cryptocurrencies. It's user-controlled. You own your own money. Support for Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, Ethereum, tokens, Monero, Ripple, Stellar, many more. This is built by a veteran team that's been building since 2014, and they believe that security is your freedom. You can find out more by visiting edge.app. That's edge.app. And this is Chris in studio with Nobody and Wade. Do I have these pseudonyms correct tonight?
That's what we're going by tonight.
That's right. Nom du jour.
Nom du jour. Okay. Well, that's good. Here's another gentleman who may need a nom du jour. Jim Ficken, at least when they send him fines from the city of, man, this is in Florida, and it looks like it's Duned In. Anybody from Florida? Nope. Never spent time.
I lived in Florida.
Ever hear of a town called Duned In? Well, this
Dunedin.
This is that what it is?
Yeah, Dunedin, Florida.
Yep, there you go. Okay, it all makes sense now. I keep seeing like the app Tuned In. I assume that Dunedin would be pronounced the same way.
Well, it probably looked as unfamiliar when you read it as it sounded when you said it.
Man, but Jim Ficken's got a problem. He's about to be foreclosed on. And any guesses as to how many years he must have gone without paying his taxes?
I bet you it wasn't that many.
I'll bet he just didn't pay his fines for not taking care of his lawn. Dunedin's like that.
Really? Is that your guess?
That's my guess.
Okay. That wouldn't surprise me.
Well, he's exactly right. A Florida man is facing foreclosure on his house due to fines over the height of the grass in his yard. The city of Dunedin moved to foreclose on resident Jim Ficken's home after Ficken racked up more than $29,000 in fines because his grass exceeded the 10 inches the city allows. Ficken, 69, is fighting back, suing the city over what he and his attorneys with the Institute for Justice call abusive and excessive fines. Ficken and his attorneys told Fox 13 he amassed the fines during a 57 weeks. That would be a long time. That'd be over a year. No, he amassed these fines over a 57-day period.
What?
Last summer, while he was out of town, settling his late mother's estate.
Wow.
They said Ficken hired a friend to cut the grass during that time, but the friend passed away unexpectedly.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
The yard is now up to city code. Quote, the grass did what grass does, and a code inspector saw it was more than 10 inches, the city allowed, and Jim was officially on the hook, unquote, said Andrew Ward, one of Ficken's attorneys.
Just because the grass was taller on the other side of the fence.
Over 10 inches. Ficken, who is retired and lives on a fixed income, was fined $500 per day, totaling nearly $30,000.
So if they catch you with over 10 inches, they're just going to bend you over and give you 10 inches of their own.
Something like that.
Wow.
He claimed he wasn't aware of the fines until they were already out of control. The city on Tuesday began moving to foreclose on Ficken's house. Quote, we're arguing in our lawsuit that limitless fines are, in fact, unconstitutional.
So yeah, they are unconstitutional.
Another of Ficken's attorneys.
Yeah. Does anybody know what it is? I forget what the...
I want to say the Eighth Amendment, but I could be wrong.
The Eighth Amendment is against cruel and unusual punishment. The problem is...
I believe that talks about excessive fines.
Cruel punishment isn't prohibited if it isn't unusual. And cruel punishment is the norm these days, so I don't know if anything can be considered cruel and unusual.
Well, I think that it's still worth what you want to do, if you were to argue this constitutionally, would argue that $500 a day fines because your lawn is long is not grounds for taking someone's home. And you,
I mean,
want
the founding
be
fathers
assured.
Would be stacking bodies right now. No, let me not say it's not grounds.
Seriously? And the Eighth Amendment reads, excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines, nor cruel or unusual punishments inflicted.
Yeah, I mean, I have a hard time imagining that any jury would find somebody guilty for a period of 60 days having not cut their lawn at $500 a day. I mean, that just, how is that not cruel and unusual?
Well, juries don't ordinarily know what the punishment is, and
well,
also
they would in this case if they were
commonly,
if they were
commonly
that would be part of the defense. They would know. They would know because it's part of the defense. They'd have to know because they couldn't make a decision on whether or not it's cruel and unusual without that information.
Well, there may not even be a jury, and it's not the jury's determination whether a thing is cruel and unusual. The way it works is you have to fight it to the Supreme Court. And right. Most people can't afford to do that if the state
That's
has already
too.
Taken all their money.
Yeah, and there was just a recent case of the gentleman who was caught with heroin in his car. He was going to sell it. It was something like $400 worth of heroin. And the police seized this under civil asset forfeiture and took a $42,000 Land Rover. And he successfully argued to the U.S. Supreme Court that taking a $42,000 vehicle for $400 worth of, you know, it was a grade A misdemeanor, I think.
Class A.
Class A, whatever.
Grade A misdemeanor.
Forgive my poor understanding of the criminal justice system because I've successfully avoided it for quite some time.
Yeah,
but the idea,
not so much.
Yeah. But this idea.
Say that again.
But again, that you could take, take a $40,000 vehicle for $400 worth of heroin. Go ahead, Rich.
It's not like I didn't steer into it for a while, though.
That's true.
I hear you. So in this case, over inch, basically for this guy's grass being greater than 10 inches in height, violates a city ordinance, therefore $500 in fines. All the time, he's not even there.
I'll bet you $500 the guy who wrote that law has less than 10 inches.
Please, Rich, come on. that's the level we have sunk to.
Have we? I don't know.
That's the same level we're on every show. But this idea that this is reasonable, I mean, how could government even... How do you answer this charge with a straight face? I just don't know how you could do
See,
this.
That's why I answer it with absurdity.
Right.
It is in itself an absurdity. I don't know if it deserves a straight answer.
Yeah. Ficken and his legal team said they will take the case all the way to the Supreme Court if that's what it takes. Quote, it's outrageous being fined this amount for being tardy cutting your grass. Now, keep in mind, 57 days. That's right. How long the guy didn't cut his grass because he was not there.
Yeah, you know, I don't know, like I can understand like a fine that is a lot, like $500 a month maybe. It still seems ridiculous to me, but
it does.
I could see that being in the realm of like, okay, reasonable for some ridiculous fine that they're trying to get force people to do something. But $500 a day?
$500 a day.
Even
apparently.
$500 a month. That's more than some people pay in rent in Florida.
Why didn't they just cut the stupid grass and bill the person for it? I mean,
that's a good point. So let's see what the city says. Quote, Mr. Ficken was cited for repeated violations on his rental property, unquote, the city said in a statement. We're going to tell you the rest of the government's excuse for fining an elderly gentleman $500 a day for not cutting his grass for 57 days, and now they want to take his house. Is that right? Do you think
absolutely not.
Government is... I'm looking for somebody to take up the side of the government here. 855-453.
Oh, yeah.
This is Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live, 855-453. That's our toll-free number. That's how you can pick up your phone and get in touch with us. That's 855-450-3733. And we'd love to hear about you. We've been discussing a story out of Florida where a Florida man... Man, I hate stories that start with the words Florida man.
Florida man, the world's most helpless and irresponsible superhero.
Well, in this case, a 69-year-old Florida man leaves town for a 57-day period. He contacts one of his friends to take care of his lawn while he's gone, who unfortunately passes away. When he returns, he realizes that the city has fined him for this 57-day period $500 a day and is now moving to foreclose on him for back payment of $29,000 in fines.
This was not a Florida man story. This was a Florida government story.
That's a good point, but
it should have followed the government the standard properly by saying Florida government fines man for leaving his lawn unmowed and then tries to take his house.
And before I want to read their statement because this is their insanity. This is their insane excuse. Quote: Mr. Ficken was cited by. Mr. Ficken was receipted for repeated violations on his rental property, the city said in a statement to Fox 13 News. On Tuesday, May 7th, 2019, the city of Dunedin...
Dunedin.
The city of Dunedin code enforcement...
It sounds like done eating.
Right. I'm done eating.
I'm done eating.
The city of Dunedin... Code Enforcement Board authorized the city's attorney's office to file foreclosure actions after resolution of the case could not be agreed upon by Mr. Ficken. What kind of agreement did you want? Okay, we're going to take your house away if you don't pay us, what, $25,000? It's just over your uncut grass.
Yeah.
Really?
That's just flat robbery.
It is. It is of the highest order. Let's see, authorize the city's attorney to file foreclosure actions after resolution of the case could not be agreed upon with Mr. Ficken. The city attorney's office has not had an opportunity to review litigation filed by Mr. Ficken and as such, no comment at this juncture. Unbelievable. So do you...
Florida government, the world's most helpless and irresponsible government.
Much better. Do you... Dear listener, do you believe that you own your home? If you're a homeowner, do you believe that you actually own it? Let me offer you an experiment. Go for a couple years without paying your property taxes.
Ew.
Don't pay some fines, whatever you want, and see if you actually own that land. You do not own it. And taking somebody's home is absolutely absurd. I don't care if this is a rental property. It's something the guy worked for. And this kind of thing kind of gets in my crop. We're going to go to the phones where we've got Peter. He's listening.
Wait a minute.
Listening from.
Are they taking the property owner's property and not? It's a rental, right? So they're not taking his property. They're taking.
They are taking that his. It's a rental property that this gentleman owns.
That he rents out to other people. Oh, I thought he was the one renting. Okay.
Right. In either case, we're going to the phones where we've got Peter calling in from Washington, D.C. Peter, you're on Free Talk Live.
Yes, I just wanted to talk about the possibility of Jacob Hornberger's nomination to become the president to run in the 2020 election within the Libertarian Party. And just for some background, I am a full, anarcho-capitalist, like, the great Lysander Spooner, Mary Rothbard, Hans Hoppe. And so I don't, in my view, I think that the state, the federal government, and for that matter, state governments, are a bunch of thugs, gangsters, and murderers. But I think Jacob Hornberger, who actually, I just read an article about him. He's great on stuff like the CIA, the stuff they do, and behind the door. Interventions that have been going on since the 50s, since it was created until now, all under the guise of so-called national security. And Jacob Hornberger is great on that. He's willing to get rid of the CIA, and he's willing to get rid of the Federal Reserve. He's willing to just shrink the size of government. And that's something that I think that we haven't seen from any presidential nominee in the Libertarian Party. I sure didn't see that for Gary Johnson, and especially his war hawk buddy, Bill Weld. Those guys are not genuine libertarians. If anything, they're leftist.
No, hold on. No, I saw Bill Weld say that he's a libertarian for life. I'm being facetious.
Well,
because
Weld aside, because Weld was never the presidential nominee.
I know.
You know, you don't have to argue everything you believe when you're running for office. As a matter of fact, if you want to get anything done, you should not. Now, some people would ask me for proof of that. Well, the proof of that is in the fact that the socialists have gotten just about everything they wanted, but they did it not for shouting for a full government takeover of the economy, but by nibbling at it and nibbling at it and nibbling at it and being absolutely relentless in nibbling at our freedom and replacing it with government.
Rich, there's a huge difference when you're talking about the difference between the socialists and the libertarians. The libertarians make up probably 2% of the population. The socialists have a big chunk of it because most people,
and I'm telling
most
you
people
how they
are
got
emotional,
that way.
They're not logical and rational.
Now, I'm telling you how they got that way.
Now, I see where you're both coming from, and the problem is incrementalism. It's easy to just take a little win, and libertarians are famous for like trumpeting little wins because they're important.
Right. Well, because there's two choices. There's incrementalists with little wins, and then there's purists with big losses.
Right.
And little wins are better than big losses.
So, Peter, besides his views on national security, is there anything else on Jacob Hornberger's position list that you particularly like?
I think he's good. And just for background, I think he works for the Future Foundation of Freedom.
Correct.
That's what the organization is called.
Yep, you can find out more at fff.org.
Right. And I think he's brilliant, like I said, on stuff like the Federal Reserve and just handling the unseen issue of the entitlement bubble,
right.
You know, and obviously that's something that's really going to affect us Americans, because it will eventually cause a sovereign debt crisis. And if the Federal Reserve tries to handle the issue, well, then consequently we will have a currency crisis.
Right.
And so I think it's important to, avoid people like Johnson and Weld, who aren't principled, who really don't have a background in Austrian school economics. I see them more as leftist libertarians. But, I as an anarchist, if Hornberger runs, I'm behind him. And I think as anarchists, we should also support Hornberger, who is a principled man.
Well, thank you for your call, Jacob. It's interesting to see who the libertarians may put forth. The party as a whole has never had a lot of success in national politics.
No,
they have not. And
I don't
part
think
of
there
that
is any chance of the Libertarian Party having any success in national politics, because you're talking about a group of people that, for the most part, are based they vote based on emotion. They're not voting on anything other than emotion.
Right.
Well, but you've got two problems there. You've got a group of people that vote based on emotion, and then you have another group of people that's trying to fight for liberty but refuses to accept the fact that people vote based on emotion and act accordingly by appealing to them when necessary based on emotion.
Yeah.
Because you have to have enough sheep on your side if you want to start a stampede.
Can I posit that there was
you're
once
talking
a
about
time?
A feudal action here. There's no point to getting people, winning people over based on emotion. You're just going to lose the overall war.
And that's what's been happening for most of my lifetime.
Right.
Not winning them over at all means losing the war faster.
Is there any logic left in American politics? Does anyone actually look at issues, or do we do things simply based on emotion? 855-450-FREE. Stay tuned for hour number three, where we will...
You love Bitcoin. It's the future, right? Well, no, not if everyone stops using it. I mean, think about it. How many places in your town take Bitcoin? One? None? Let's be real. If this Bitcoin thing is ever going to happen, it's going to need your help. The good news is, the guys at AnyPay have your back. We built a website called helpmetakebitcoin.com, and it's a place you can send any business, and they'll be set up to take Bitcoin in 5 minutes. helpmetakebitcoin.com.
This is Free Talk Live, hour number three. Man, time flies when you're having fun. I'm having fun. I don't know about you guys. You guys are fun to do shows with.
I'm having fun, and then I was just floored by that last Onion commercial I happened to catch it. It was a story of people suing the U.S. Congress for 23 million negligent homicides in failing to stop wars that were against the national interest, and it was really good.
Hear, hear for the Onion. Mm-hmm. Joining us in studio, it's myself, Chris.
Nobody.
And Wade.
All right. Everybody is has chosen their name of the evening. I'm the only one who's just stuck to the OG.
Nom du jour.
I got nothing, guys. I could make something up, but...
What's your soup du jour? That's our soup of the day.
I love that line. Hey, one thing I do want to tell you about is ForkFest 2019. ForkFest? Yes, ForkFest. Join liberty-minded voluntarists, anarchists, and libertarians this summer from June 13th to June 18th for ForkFest 2019 at Rogers Campground in the beautiful White Mountains of New Hampshire. ForkFest happens right before the Porcupine Freedom Festival, and ForkFest is decentralized, unlike the Porcupine Freedom Festival.
Because anarchists do it voluntarily.
There you go, which means that there is no one in charge. It also means there's no ticket cost. Just reserve your camping or RSV site, or your RV site, or motel room with Rogers Campground for June 13th through the 18th. You can simply relax and go camping with other like-minded liberty lovers, you can create whatever experience or event you'd like to have others take part in. If you're planning an event for ForkFest, be sure to let others know in advance. You can connect with other ForkFesters via the unofficial Telegram chat or the ForkFest forums. Links to those are on the unofficial website, ForkFest.party. That's ForkFest.party. And I know, Rich, I'm sorry, nobody, you're going. Chris Wade.
Absolutely. Nobody's going to ForkFest.
Wade, Chris. Wade, are you going to ForkFest?
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely.
I sponsored it.
I know that.
ForkFest I sponsored with ForkFest. So I have to be at ForkFest now.
I was asking a leading question there. Yeah, so now you have one libertarian get-together sponsoring another one, which I think is great.
It is.
I think that's a very cool development. And it's just good to see more people come here to New Hampshire, and even if it's just for a weekend, even if it's just a camping trip to...
Well, you
got to
start somewhere, I think.
You
do. It's the way to phrase it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that's always been the goal of the Free State Project, was to get 20,000 people to make a pledge to move to New Hampshire within 5 years. They met their goal of 20,000...
Pledgers.
Pledgers, I guess that would be the best way to put it. Pledgers a year ago, 2 years ago.
I think it was 2 years ago. Yeah, and it was twice as many people moved the following year after than the prior year. So the numbers are definitely going up.
That's intriguing. And there's literally not a week that goes by where I don't see somebody making plans or making the moves right now, and that's exciting stuff. The idea is if you get a whole lot of liberty-minded folks in one small geographic state, then you have an opportunity to enact some real changes at a local level, and we're reaping the benefits of that. Not that it's a done deal.
It's a start.
It is.
It's a start.
It is. It's going to take a lot of effort to reverse 250 years of party politics.
But it is
New
a good
Hampshire
start.
Feels freer to me than any other state that I've ever been in, but it doesn't feel nearly as free as I want it to feel. There's a lot of fighting left to do.
Oh yeah.
But there's a lot of fighting that's been done too.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Yes. Yeah, it's it's interesting because the more people you get together, the more pushback there is. But at the same time, they're afraid. And they should be, because we are having an impact. We are making a difference. Yeah. And it may be, you know, a few more years before we actually, you know, take over the system, so to speak. But you know what? It's going to happen. It's just a matter of time. So yeah.
We're shifting the Overton window. And that's the biggest thing. We've got Republicans now in the legislature saying taxation is theft as a mantra. That's hilarious to me. Now, obviously, they're not living by it yet, but baby steps.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, you know, the more they say it, the more we get to hold their feet to the fire every time they don't live up to
Absolutely.
It.
And there's 20 libertarians in the House or somewhere around there,
yeah.
Which is more than it's 20 times more than any other state, from what I understand. So that's a pretty good number.
Yeah, if you, wherever you're at in the United States, look at your state legislature, look at the counts, and see how many liberty-minded, libertarians specifically, how many libertarians you have there. And you may have some, you know, some liberty-minded Democrats or Republicans in your state house, but we're getting people elected, and I've seen change. You know,
and
I've
just
been
at
here.
The House. That's yeah. not including all the other people who've been elected at lower levels. Like,
oh, absolutely.
I don't know. Didn't you run into?
I was a selectman. So
yeah,
that's
a selectman.
Sort of
so
in New
England. What is a selectman? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. A selectman in New England. This is a sort of another form of state or of city government, but it is. Sort of a combination of mayor and city council. So smaller towns usually have selectmen. It's usually three or five people that make up sort of the executive branch. What's unique about New Hampshire is that the legislative branch in these small towns is everyone in town. They make up the legislative branch, and then the selectmen are just there to make sure stuff works, make sure bills get paid and stupid things like that. But it's pretty unique. And yeah, I did that within a year of moving to New Hampshire. Was, you know, suddenly I find myself a selectman, and I've held other positions too. The important thing to remember, though, is that lots of people can get involved at local levels. You don't have to be in the state house. We'd love to have you there.
And you don't have to be a Libertarian Party. I mean, there are, I support the Libertarian Party, but I also support the libertarianly inclined who run within other parties. And
well, that doesn't make you not a libertarian. You can't even run as a libertarian currently.
Well, you can run. You don't have the benefit of major party status.
Right.
Which libertarians don't have here. And they don't have a lot of states, because guess who controls who gets to be on the ballot? Democrats and Republicans.
Right.
That's in most states.
But Gary Johnson did give us major party status in the presidential election. We just lost it in the midterm, unfortunately.
Yeah, so a lot
of
these
people griping about Gary Johnson and too few people bringing those voters back in.
Right, and that's the way this stuff works, that if you reach certain arbitrary thresholds, then you're allowed to be called, you know, you're on the ballot, whether it's national or whether it's at the state level or the local level. Everybody's got their own set of rules, but in the end, it's the parties that are in control that get to make up what those rules are.
Mm.
And those rules are pretty much designed to keep third parties off the ballot. So, you know, it always amazes me when I hear stories
from
Europe. And
that 4% that voted Libertarian that gave us major party status,
right?
Their votes counted.
Yeah.
You know, unlike the extra votes for Trump or Hillary. I don't even
know
who won.
You know what I find kind of hilarious is that just because they keep us off the ballot, they're not really keeping us off the ballot. They're just keeping us from running as a libertarian, at least, you know,
correct
on the ballot itself, saying that next to the name. But that doesn't mean we're not running, and that's how come we end up with 20 representatives in the House, but you know, they're not
libertarian under the official whatever, because they, you know, the rest of the politicians won't allow it in the Democratic and Republican parties.
And that's the idea behind the Vote for Nobody campaign. Is for those who don't know, I filed paperwork to legally change my name to Nobody.
Oh, did you do that?
Yeah, the paperwork is in.
Oh,
I'm serious.
That's great.
I am dead serious about this. If I can't get Nobody, then I will change it to Noon.
So wait a minute. Why couldn't you get
No One?
Why couldn't you get Nobody?
The only reason that I can imagine it is because it was like the equivalent of a reserved word.
Unbelievable. Would you?
But I don't think it is.
Okay.
So the nice thing about that is get on the ballot any way you can. If your name is Nobody, I'll vote for you.
Absolutely. How could you resist voting for Nobody? 855-450-FREE. What do you think? Is there a reason that libertarians are shunned? This is Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live, 855-453. We're here to take your phone calls, answer your questions as best we can, and hear what you have to say. This is an open phone show, so you call about whatever you like and we will discuss it. We've got a couple of people on the line waiting to get on here, and we've been kind of all over the board like we are every night, which is good. We mix it up, and we'd like to mix it up with you. We've talked about legalization of drugs. We've talked about age limits on tobacco and alcohol. We talked about a guy who was fined $500 a day for not cutting his lawn, and the county says they are going to repossess his home.
Wow.
It's just that sounds absolutely funny, ridiculous.
And at the same time, it's like, imagine being that guy.
It makes me angry.
Yeah.
It infuriates me.
It's like, not even my home.
Yeah. Right.
And we talked about decriminalization in Denver of psychedelic mushrooms, which we happen to believe is a good idea. We're going to go to the phones, where we've got David calling in from New Mexico. David, you're on Free Talk Live.
Who's going to Forkfest? Nobody?
I'm sorry?
Yes, that's correct. Nobody is going to Forkfest.
Nobody's going to Porkfest. Nope. Absolutely. I'll be there with bells on.
There you go. What's on your mind, David?
Glimpse behind the curtain. The public defender, that were one of them that I was talking to extensively, gave me a glimpse behind the curtain. And let me give you a little bit of background, first of all, so you can relate to the glimpse. And this is all public record. There's no gossiping here. All of this can be read in the state court record.
Okay.
There's a judge, M. Monica Zamora, and she was a judge in my case years ago, and she put me on trial for my children, whether my children should stay in my life or go to a stepfather as on the birth certificate, and they had their little kangaroo court, and she found against me and for the dude that married their mother and terminated my parental rights and adopted my kids to him. And I appealed that decision, and I won a unanimous 3-judge decision saying that Judge M. Monica Zamora had violated the law, and they vacated what she had done. They reversed it. So they unterminated my parental rights and unadopted my children from this dude that paid however many thousands of dollars to hire the lawyer that he did.
Okay.
And what the bottom line of the decision that came out of the New Mexico Court of Appeals, signed by Wexler, Bustamante, and Kennedy, and I forget which one of them wrote it, but those are the 3 judges on this decision. The very last paragraph where they give the little summary, it said, and this is a pretty darn close quote, but let me paraphrase it anyway, because it might be more fun. They said, Judge M. Monica Zamora, guess what? You, as an all-knowing judge, incorrectly applied the burden of proof. You were supposed to make the petitioner, the guy trying to take my kids,
right,
prove his case because they took me to court. But instead, you applied the burden backwards and you made Mr. Olson prove that he should keep his own children. And guess what? Furthermore, Judge M. Monica Zamora, had you correctly applied the burden of proof, the petitioner didn't make their case anyway. And so anyway, and ironically, this Judge M. Monica Zamora, she was then a district court judge. She now sits on that same court of appeals where I beat her with a 3-0 decision.
Now judging other cases where families are at risk. So this stuff drives me nuts. I mean, the idea, first of all, many people hold the idea that judges are infallible. Man, if you were a judge, you must have achieved the highest levels in the legal profession to be nominated to be a judge or to be appointed as a judge or to be elected. You must just be the most brilliant legal mind that's out there. And we know that's not the case.
I think you must be a great actor to be able to keep a straight face.
Right. Practicing that. No, it's just this idea that there is a level of legal wisdom where fallibility just goes out the window. You know, anything I decide must be the case.
That's exactly what the public defender dude said. I described another situation with that. I told him that situation. And then I told him this one. The very first day, the very first hearing in front of that Judge M. Monica Zamora in New Mexico, she said on the record, she said, quote, "Because this is a contested adoption, I must appoint an attorney for the children." And the second that she hit the period in that sentence, I said, "And you must appoint one for me." And her face got really angry, and she leaned forward in her chair. And she kind of had that look where she put her hands on her hips and she raised her voice and she said exactly like this. She said, "Oh, no, we don't." And so I picked up the printout. I picked up the printout that I had the foresight to print out and bring with me. And I just immediately began to read. And I read that 32A516E that I've told you about, which says that she needs to appoint me an attorney. And so I read that. It was just one or two sentences.
But she didn't know that one off the top of her head?
She turned, you're ruining my story, man. She turned to her computer.
That's my job.
She turned to her computer, and there's silence in the courtroom. All you hear is click, 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 and then silence while she's reading. And then click, 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 and then a little more silence while she's reading. And then in this soft, meek voice, she says, "Where are you reading that from?" And I said, 32A516E. And you hear click, 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 click. And then silence for about 30 seconds. And she turns to her big fat rear end. She turns that in her chair to her assistant. And she says, "Appoint him an attorney." And then full circle, upon hearing what I just told you, the public defender dude, he says, "Sadly," and he's in the courtroom, you know, all the time. He says, "Sadly, I see that same ignorance every day in the courtroom by judges and other professionals that should know better." And the law that I cited to her. Oh, also, when she was getting herself elected or trying to run a candidate for the next Court of Appeals, she in her campaign literature, she bragged that she had participated in over 500 adoptions. And this children's code where this 32A5
this is children's key to
code
that
I referred to. Pardon?
This is key to your case, and this is something that the judge should know about. This is family court, and David, thank you for your call. But that's the point. I mean, even when you think that, you know, I'm sorry, if you believe that there are legal specialists that know everything and can answer all questions and will always meet justice upon you, it's false. It is a lie. It is something you are taught, and it's not reality in our judicial system. 855-450-FREE. This is Free Talk Live.
Go to themorganreport.com and receive updates and insights you will not find anywhere else on the web. you will discover how to grow and protect your wealth under all market conditions. The Free Morgan Report provides interviews, webinars, question and answer sessions, plus mind-blowing videos. As David Morgan says, let my passion create your wealth. TheMorganReport.com. TheMorganReport.com.
This is Free Talk Live, 855-450-FREE. That's our toll-free number. We're in hour number three. We've done 2 hours so far. We've got about a half hour left to go, and we still have plenty of time to take your calls on any subject you would like to bring up.
What happened to the other half hour?
That's right. We still have it ahead of us.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we've got 2.5 hours behind.
Did we? What did I say?
You said we had 2 hours behind us and a half hour ahead of us, and I wanted to know what had happened to the other half hour. It's supposed to be a 3 hour show, bro.
It is.
A 3 hour tour.
But about this time of the night, I get a little punchy, and God knows what comes out of my mouth at some points, but hopefully we're going to get through this and we're going to have fun doing it. 855-450-FREE. Again, that is our number. I'd say you could hit us up on Discord, but our Discord call-in lines are not working well. But you can definitely join in the chat at discord.lrn.fm. There's always lots of stuff going on in the chat rooms. And some of it I could even repeat. And some of it, now that I take a look at it, yeah, I can't repeat that. we're gonna go.
I'm glad to know we've got a flow of unmitigated filth through our chat room. I'll have to check that
good.
Out.
It's always good. And to give the a little shout out to the fine folks in the Discord on air chat room. It's always fun there. We're gonna go to John in Florida. He's listening to us on WTTB 1490. I think that's Vero Beach. John, you're on Free Talk Live. John.
Hello?
Yep, you're on the air.
Yes, I was just going to tell you a little situation that happened to me many years ago. I was 18 years old. I was arrested for B&E on automobiles. And I went in front of a judge by the name of Carling Stedman in Pate County.
Okay.
And he had been caught taking graft and was never really charged, but he got voted out in his last 2 days on the bench. I went in front of him, and every single person that day except me went to jail. And I was put on probation, which my attorney, he contested it, and we went back to court again.
Okay.
To a new judge that was put on the bench by the name of Alfonso Seppi.
All righty.
Well, after 7 times of going to a lie detector test, and the prosecutor, some little guy with a Napoleon syndrome.
You'll see this from time to time.
Yes. Kept saying that something was wrong and, you know, kept sending me back for these lie detector tests.
Now, are lie detector tests admissible in court in Florida?
If you agree to it.
So were you attempting to prove your innocence or to further your case by taking a lie detector test?
To prove my innocence.
Understand. Okay. Please continue.
So after the 7th time, my attorney, who was not a criminal attorney, a family friend, and I don't suggest somebody do that, finally stood up and said, look, we've done this 7 times. You know, how many more times do we have to do this? And the judge agreed and said, not guilty. And about 10 years after that, I was pulled over and was asked by a police officer, had I ever been arrested? And I told him no.
Right.
Well, he came back and said, I'll give you one more chance to tell me the truth. I said, well, I was arrested, but found not guilty. And my attorney said that, you know, the case was abolished or whatever. And the cop said, no. He says, once you're arrested the rest of your life.
So they're bringing up, they were bringing up an arrest, not a case where you were actually found guilty?
That's correct.
So how is that possibly legal? Or is that, you're saying that's just the practice of the state of Florida to keep these sorts of records and to pull them out when convenient?
Well, the question was, have you ever been arrested, not have you ever been convicted?
Right, but it sounds like the cop was trying to use that as justification for some further action he was going to take.
That's why I generally answer questions like that with,
your business.
I don't have to answer your questions.
I've literally told a cop, it's not your business.
Yeah, and that... whenever you can, that is the best answer you can possibly give. Yeah. And there are a lot of times when you can do that. In a lot of states, if you're walking down the street and they say, I need to see some ID, you can say, I don't have to give you that. And it's
Done that many times.
Right. And and New Hampshire happens to be one of those. Be sure to check your local state laws as to what those are. But the best advice is just not to talk to them. If you are forced to do so, then, you know, then it becomes a personal decision. But really, I mean, just not dealing with them is the best possible, the best outcome could possibly come that way.
And the other thing that I recommend is film them.
Definitely.
Pull out your phone. Get cell 411 or live stream it to Facebook. Put it somewhere where they can't delete it, where they can't smash your phone and or lose your phone while you're arrested and destroy it.
And they will do it.
They absolutely do that.
Get it on the cloud.
They're liars and thieves.
Yep. John, how'd everything end up?
Well, it ended up okay, but it's haunted me through my business career or my job career. And I'm 68 now, and, you know, it's long since been gone. But the funniest thing is this other judge, Alfonso Seppi, about 20 years after I had gone in front of him,
right,
was arrested and put in prison for taking money from the cartels. Find their people innocent.
Oh my God. Now that is it's a fairly common thing we hear, but I just love that idea. And again, thank you for your call. This idea that the legal system, everyone involved, I mean, they are the pinnacle of you know, just the ultimate defender of good and truth and justice, and they never make mistakes. They are infallible. That's the premise that when you go into a courtroom against a, you know, even if it's just for a traffic ticket, you know, what the judge is first going to work to do is establish that this police officer is an expert. You know, tell us about your credentials, and he will list them. And the judge basically looks at him and says, well, you're obviously some sort of an expert at the determination of speed of motor vehicles while they're traveling on the roads. This is where things start out. The judge, who is supposed to be impartial in this case, is going to do half of the prosecutor's work for him. He's going to make sure that everybody in the courtroom knows that this guy is, you know, a pinnacle of society, and you should trust him. Mm. Chris, you've been to court more than a few times. I'm not saying that because you're a criminal. You are by no means, but you don't take any crap from these guys.
No, I've had two parking tickets, and I was arrested for crossing the street legally and disorderly conduct, neither of which I were actually crimes. And the one case was dropped, and the other I won on the two tickets, on the two parking tickets. So.
Right.
See, I've seen a lot of your conduct, and none of it has been disorderly.
Right, right.
You're a very orderly person.
That's basically what we came to conclude too. When I had a lawyer look at it, and apparently the prosecutor agreed because they dropped it.
Yeah.
And there's a lawsuit now. So for other related things. So.
But that's good. Take it back. Take the fight back to them, and put them on the defensive. That's a good thing. 855-450-FREE. We've got another segment coming up, and there may be time for your call. This is Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live, final segment, but you can still get on the air if you call 855-450-FREE right now, and we'd still like to hear from you. We've been taking calls all night, and I love, it's fun. We bring in stories, you know, we bring in things that we find compelling, and we discuss them with our callers, but sometimes callers just have their own story they want to tell, and we enjoy that even more. So no matter what it is, give us a call. Once again, that number is 855-450-FREE. And one of the stories that I did bring in tonight has to do with how the U.S. miscounted the dead in Syria. A rights group.
Are you serious?
I know. It's hard to believe. And the reason
it's disturbingly high.
Well, the reason I brought this in, and I'm going to try to flip around here a little bit, but there was recently a military intelligence officer that was arrested today and charged with providing The Intercept with some information, some top secret information on how the U.S. was counting its death tolls in Iraq and in Syria. The issue was...
So there's the public body count announced, but then they classify that it's a lie.
Well, they just basically give out wrong numbers. And as this gentleman basically put out was, anyone killed in a drone strike is a armed combatant, regardless of whether that drone happened to hit a hospital or whether that drone happened to take out a wedding, the administrations, the Obama administrations and continuing into the Trump administrations, found it was much easier to just say that everybody who was killed was an enemy combatant and they were armed and we had to take them out. I mean, this has been standard practice. It's PR.
Oh, this is Trump's America.
Well, I hate
did you say that happened during the Obama administration, too?
Believe it or not.
Oh, thanks for clarifying that.
Yeah. Point being that this is a bipartisan issue. So please, you Democrats and you Republicans, please both get on your high horses. This comes to us from foreignpolicy.com. The United States dramatically underestimated the number of civilians killed in the U.S.-led coalition's assault on the self-proclaimed capital of the Islamic State 2 years ago, according to research by two leading human rights groups. During the four-month campaign to oust the Islamic State from the Syrian city of Raqqa in 2017, of note, that is under Trump's administration, some 1,600 civilians died as a result of coalition airstrikes and bombing. Amnesty International and Air Wars wrote in a new report. The United States puts the civilian death toll in Raqqa at 318, according to the spokesman for the U.S. campaign to defeat the Islamic State. The report draws on nearly 2 years of research that concluded that the U.S.-led coalition was responsible for significantly higher civilian casualties throughout its four-year campaign to destroy the Islamic State caliphate in Syria and Iraq than has been reported. The U.S. military estimated in February that it had unintentionally killed 1,387 civilians in the fighting. Bear in mind, the reported number was 318, which began in 2014. Note to self, that was under Obama. Donatella Rivera, the Amnesty researcher who led the investigation, estimates that the real number was about 10 times higher. She describes the level of destruction in Raqqa as, quote, unparalleled in modern times, unquote. So this idea that, first of all, we can create positive change with bombs, thoughts. that we can win wars by bombing areas that are known to be populated by civilians. Civilians, for those of you who may not know, are innocent.
I mean, so we're killing more innocent people than we are actual, like, threats.
Correct.
That's insane.
Yes. And as a result, the only thing we do is we do create a banner foundation for creating more terrorists.
Right. If you're killing 10 to 1, that's a problem.
Yes. And what are you going to have? If someone came into your home and killed your family, do you think you might become a terrorist? What would it take for someone to become a terrorist?
Well, I mean, what's the difference between a terrorist and a, you know, a freedom fighter?
Exactly. But my point is that, you know, if you are going to take innocent lives, I cannot think of anything that would drive me to revolution faster than someone killing my family.
Yeah, I mean, basically, the U.S. is trying to kill basically people that are against Americans, but or against the American government. But the American government is going in and killing, you know, they're actually committing terrorism.
By definition.
Yeah.
The wholesale murder. And,
right.
And believe me, I have no sympathy for terrorists, for true terrorists that go around.
Yeah.
And they try to make a political point or affect foreign policy by killing innocent civilians. Now, that's what we define terrorists as, correct?
Yeah, I don't have any sympathy for our politicians either.
Right. And by that same definition, how can you possibly have any respect for our politicians?
Well, they are the terrorists.
They are performing terrorists.
At least the ones that have voted for these.
And yet they call people defending their own countries from invasion terrorists.
Correct.
Right.
And that's...
That's not terrorism.
That's not terrorism.
That's...
That's asymmetrical warfare.
Yeah,
that's what you do.
Your people, your country.
Yeah.
And what if the tide... I mean, I just always imagine, you know, if this were reversed. You know, let's just say that, you know, we've got some bad stuff going on in Texas. And the Chinese, you know, they're going to help make us right. They're going to come over here with about 500,000 pounds of ordnance and drop it on Dallas, where we believe the terrorists are holed up. Now, never mind the fact that, you know, we may lose, you know, a few thousand civilians or 10,000 civilians in Dallas. You know, we should be thankful to the Chinese for bombing the hell out of that and taking out the bad guys. Under what world,
you know,
would anyone possibly think that that's justified?
Somebody, you know, might ask the question, are we actually trying to kill the terrorists, or are we trying to create more terrorists to excuse our actions overseas? If we create more terrorists, it gives them a reason to be overseas and to do all the horrible things that we're doing in the first place.
Does that help fund a military-industrial complex?
Right.
You see,
somebody's profit.
I think if the politicians were so stupid as to believe that the policies that have been failing for the last 50 years will suddenly start working, if they were that stupid, they wouldn't be able to rip us off so effectively through graft.
You know, I don't think it's the politicians so much as the people who are pulling the strings behind them. I mean, the people are voting... The dumb people, okay, which is most of the people in the United States and around the world, are voting for other dumb people. But who's actually pulling the strings behind it?
Right. And I agree with that.
I think it's a big part of it's probably the military-industrial complex, the people who are profiting off of war.
Yeah, well, basically...
Amongst other industries.
It's George Carlin called it the club. You know, it's a big club and you're not in it. Who's in it? The politicians, the people running the major... corporations, the people running the movie studios, the people running the media, the people running the Federal Reserve Bank. The bankers are like the founding members of the club.
Right.
You know?
And somebody
it's a
has
a big club and you're not in it.
Exactly. There is the fact of funding, and if you are lending money to both sides, then you are going to profit.
Right.
You will always profit, and that's what Eisenhower warned us against. I suspect that Eisenhower probably knew more about the military-industrial complex than any other sitting president we've ever had. Probably knew more going into the job. That's probably a better way of putting it. Would you agree?
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that George Washington probably had a more encyclopedic knowledge of the military-industrial complex of his day. It's
true.
Because it was probably much smaller in those days.
Yeah.
There wasn't that much to know, but I'm sure he was very, very knowledgeable. And it surprises me that he spoke up against it, because usually these guys don't.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they do, they end up like Kennedy.
But if you want to get elected, support the military-industrial complex.
Absolutely.
Support the entertainment industry.
And if you support liberty, don't. But we're out of time. I want to thank you all for joining us here on Free Talk Live. We're here every night from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, 365 days a year. As always, give us a call, let us know what's on your mind, and we thank you for listening. This is Free Talk Live.
Are you concerned that liberty, free market economics, and the values that made America great are no longer taught in schools? Well, so am I. So I got my son the Tuttle Twins children's book series.
My name is Jack, and I'm 11 years old, and I just started the Tuttle Twins. So far, I have learned that some people can use the government to ruin the economy and destroy people's businesses.
Give all the young people in your life a chance at reason and clear thought, because they're not going to get it at school. There are 9 books in the series, and each one teaches a set of ideas that children aren't getting elsewhere. Go to TuttleTwins.com and use coupon code FTL to get 40% off. Again, that's TuttleTwins.com.